Welcome to the Tabletop Sportcast. I'm your host, James Cast. Today's April 28th, 2024, and this is episode 162. Today I'll be counting down the top 20 baseball movies of all time. We are in the middle of baseball season, and yeah, I've got baseball fever, so that's why today's topic just felt right, and I had a break between interviews, so it felt like a good time to just kind of go with a little off topic. So we're not going to really focus too much on the tabletop today, although I will say, like, the list was curated a little bit with the tabletop in mind, and we'll talk about that to some degree. Also, a lot of input from the community as I posted this poll on my Facebook page, and I'll do that from time to time, just put some poll questions out and try to build an episode around those. So thanks to all those who contributed to today's list, and the way I organized it is that anything that got votes from the poll is at the top of this list, and then everything else is more my kind of opinion on some movies that wanted to make sure you saw. And we'll talk about a little bit about some also-rans or some honorable mentions that didn't quite make the list, and I'll kind of give some reasons why. All right, if you'd like to get in touch with me, send me an email at tabletopsportcast@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you, to hear about the projects that you're working on and whether they're finished or in flight. Love hearing new project ideas. Might be looking to kick off a couple of projects in the next couple of months to kind of get ready for 2025. I've started penciling down some for myself as well. And also, if you've got questions or want to respond to any of the topics, love hearing from people about the podcast. All right, before we get into today's main topic, let's take a look back at the week that was on the tabletop. All right, let's start our look back at the tabletop and cover some metrics real quick. So far this year, 29 games have made it to the table. That includes sports and non-sport games, but mostly sports games. I haven't had a chance to get a lot of non-sport games on the table, although had a little bit better success with that over the past couple weeks, as I've been able to kind of maintain a good pace with the gaming projects. So far this year, 195 sessions completed. And right now, I'm a little low on my green and yellow metrics. 13 games are in the green, which means they've been played in the last 30 days. 9 games are in the yellow, which means they've been played in the last 90 days. And 62 past 90 days. And I think that's really telling, especially when I've talked about some of the struggles I've had with getting additional games on the table and as in above the projects that I've got going on. So it's probably more reflective of that, that I've had a hard time getting other games to the table. So, but also I will say, like, I'm going to see more games getting into the red. Cause last year I tried to force a lot of games to the table. I don't know how many of those will really make it back to the table that often. So, probably will still continue to have a lot of games in the red. But usually I'm trying to get to about like 17 games in the green, 25 in the yellow, and then like 42 in the red. So it's really the yellow that I'm struggling in, but even green, not getting as many games cycled in each month. And a lot of that comes down to the ones that are not project related, and trying to get those to the table too. What has been on the table? Let's start with History Maker Baseball, where I flipped my projects. I was originally going to spend the next few months with this kind of mashup project that I was going to do with the 1973 and 1998 season. I combined all those cards into like making a roster for each team, especially for the ones that were around in 73. So there's a few of the expansion teams that I left out. I did make an expansion team that's really more of an all-star team. When you think about like the teams in 98 that were not around in 73, they had a choice of about six or seven teams there. So Yeah. So I decided to flip that with the one that I was going to do later this year, which is using the 2018 season and focusing on the two Cy Young Award winners. I really wanted to do kind of like a Jacob DeGrom project, and decided in 2018 it was him and Blake Snell were the Cy Young Award winners. Snell was still with Tampa Bay. DeGrom was still with the Mets. So I just took those two teams, and I am just playing a head-to-head matchup for 31 games. I'm going to have really to see how DeGrom and Snell face off against each other. Now, DeGrom is an ace star in History Maker Baseball, and Snell is a full ace. So I also got a chance to really put to the test some of these newer rules that came out in around the ace pitchers. If you want to see those, go to the Play Games FAQ, the FAQ, and that's maintained by Al Wilson. It gives a lot of details on some of the options that are available. So I'm taking advantage of all those. And the biggest one that's had an impact for these two has been the ace's ability to override going to any of the intangible charts. I've basically eliminated going to those other charts, which speeds up some of the games for me. But yeah, if when it comes down to experience chart, they're overriding it. DeGrom is a neutral and Snell is a semi-prospect, so doesn't really benefit either one of them. Although I will say for Tampa, there are a few more prospects on their team. So sometimes it's tempting with DeGrom, but then you think about it and you're like, well, 50-50 chance of him not getting it. And he's an ace star flash control. Like, he's got a much better chance at staying on the main chart and getting the out. Same goes for the right now chart, which I will override unless it's the later innings and they're going to be hot. Like, if they just got a strikeout, more than likely, and both of them strike out a lot of batters. So if they got a good chance to go with a hot and a cold batter, like they're hot, batter's cold, I take advantage of that. Otherwise, stay away from that right now chart, and we stay away from the team chemistry chart as well. The ones that I still have it go to is if it happens in the from the main chart, like if you go to the umpire or if you go to the box and bogeys or if you go to the ballpark, those still happen, as well as the drama charts. All those can still happen. But it's really sped up the game and it's really helped them kind of start taking control of the games again. So that's been going well. I am 10 games in. The Mets have won 8 of the 10 at this point. So it's been a pretty one-sided affair so far, which is kind of surprising because I actually didn't think the Mets offense was strong enough to defeat the Rays. And it might just come down to DeGrom being just a little bit stronger than Snell. All right, what else? Wrapped up the Highlight project. That was my April showcase. Completed the Grand Prix and the final standings. I took the top 8 based on their kind of rating number. And it was Rojo who ended up taking the, That's got to update the standings here. Nico ends up taking first place with 19 Grand Prix points. Yadier was second. And then Laurito and Rojo were tied for third. So that's how the Highlight event ended. And let's see. Next up, we had Dice United finished up my 2022 NWSL tournament. This is the Women's Professional League in the United States. My championship game came down to Seattle, who won the winner's bracket, and Kansas City, who won the loser's bracket. Kansas City had been eliminated originally or knocked to the loser's bracket by Seattle. So Kansas City was going to have to come back and win two out of the next two games in order to win the championship. The semifinal game, in a sense, or the first of the two championship games, ended up going into extra time, and it took almost over 200 minutes before Kansas City finally got a goal. It went 0-0 until about the 209th minute or some crazy number like that. So they really ended up playing 2-plus games. Kansas City finally got the win, but then Seattle dominated them 3-0 in the final game in Seattle takes the championship. So they are my 2022 NWSL tournament champions. The PGA mini season. So again, with the 1986 season, the most recent ones that I was able to get to the table was the Masters. So my Masters went down to a playoff. Here's kind of what happened in the final holes. Craig Stadler and Payne Stewart both had finished, and they were one behind Bernard Langer. And Langer went to 18. And this is where I came down to a decision point. So he gets to 18 and he has a double difficult putt for par. So I had the choice then. It's like, oh boy, do I lag up and just take the playoff, or do I attempt the putt? Because if he makes it, he wins the Masters. And I decided he's just going to try to win it here, right? And so he went for the double difficult putt, and unfortunately not only missed that, but missed the difficult putt for bogey. And he ended up making a double bogey putt, finishing one behind Stadler and Stewart, who ended up going into a playoff. And it was Craig Stadler who ended up winning it on the second of the two playoff holes. Played 18 over. They both shot, I think, par, and then we played the 10th, and Stadler came away with a par, Stewart bogeyed, and that was it. So the Masters was completed. So I'm about three events of the 10 completed for that project. And then Grid Zone, I completed nights 7 and 8 of that, and that project will wrap up next month. Kicked off Dice United. Fast Drive Football kicked off the 1984 USFL season. Mentioned this one last week. So New Jersey wins their opener against Birmingham 24-23. They scored a touchdown in the final moments to win that one. And then Philadelphia faced Memphis in the first game of the kind of King of the Hill tournament, and Philadelphia wins 33-7. So we'll stick with Philadelphia with the game 2 of that King of the Hill tournament in that project. And then finally, Red, White, and Blue Racing. Well, not finally, but Red, White, and Blue Racing, 1970 stars, the Carolina 500 at the North Carolina Speedway. It was Bobby Allison who took the checkered flag in a rain-shortened event. Only made 47 of the 50 turns, but it was Bobby Allison who picked up the win there. And Baseball Highlights Dice was one of the games I got on the table that was not a project game. And again, not a whole lot of them making it there, but got Baseball Highlights Dice on the table. Tried it in the difficult setting where you don't start with any of the power dice, and I lost 2 of 3 to Fitz Hits. Now, Fitz Hits wins on tiebreakers, so game one finished 12-12. He takes the win. Game two finished 10-10. He took the win. And then I finally came out on top in game three, 15-11. So Fitz Hits wins 2 out of 3, thanks to him winning the tiebreakers. And let's see, did I miss anything on the list? It was History Maker Baseball Express. That's right. Kicked off, well, had continued the Continental League playoffs from 1974, got games 4 through 6 completed there. I want to say I got another set of these done too. May have left it off my list, so I have to add that in there. But yeah, I think I actually wrapped up the Continental League playoffs as well. And that one ended with Buffalo taking the championship. Denver was kind of a surprise finalist there. Denver beat San Antonio, beat Toronto, beat Chicago, who was probably the number one team, and Denver ended up getting into the championship game. Buffalo had a little easier road. They had a first-round bye, beat Hartford, and then beat Montreal. So they never had to face Boston, who was probably their top foe in that side of the bracket. Montreal knocked off Boston. So Buffalo had an easier ride. They never really faced a top team. The top four teams were Chicago, Toronto, Buffalo, and Boston. And Denver knocked off two of those teams. So Buffalo, a little easier road to the championship, but they do take home that championship. And that was my fictional tournament for the month. And that's a wrap. So that's it was a pretty full week. All told, let's see. What's the final tally here? We got a grand total of 21 sessions done since really the last 2 weeks. With 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different games making it to the table. So it was a good week, good couple weeks. And we'll look to do this again. In really good shape for the month. I've got a couple of sessions left to finish up for the month. Still have a couple to make up from, like one really to make up from last month. But I have started to shuffle the deck a little bit. I decided to cancel the fictional college basketball tournament project that I was going to do. Just realized I was doing a little too much with hoops right now and really wanted to focus more on the other hoops project that I was going to do. And they just were going to overlap too much for the next couple months. And it was just poor planning on my part because I've really been one of the things I was trying to do this year was to get away from the idea of playing a game multiple times in over the same time period. And that 1986 kind of like game of the day is really where I wanted to get back to. But even that one feels a little long for the hoops, but we'll see. I'm going to try to go back to that one a little bit. But I've also been toying with maybe just kicking off a new project for the all-time great set and just kind of running with that with hoops. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, you got the full play game coming out at probably in about a month's time. I think in a month's time, it'll be out and that'll be tempting too. So we'll have to see. I might want to try that one with some of the all-time greats as well. I'm not really sure. We'll see. But yeah, I got to figure out my hoops plan a little bit better. But I do have hoops kind of on the schedule for not next month, but in June. Going to have another overlap as I do like a Blam tournament. So that was kind of what I was facing was like doing Blam, doing the fictional college basketball and doing my kind of like 1985-86 game of the day. Just felt like there was just too much that was overlapping on top of each other. Something had to give. And I decided that was going to be that fictional college basketball tournament. So it got bounced. And like I said, I had to find a way to free up some time in the calendar anyway. So that felt like a good one to kind of knock out and free up some time for some other things. All right. Let's get to today's main topic. All right, we'll get into today's main topic. And before I do, let me also shout out, if you want to keep track of everything happening from my tabletop, head on over to facebook.com/tabletopsportcast. Try to post there a few times a week. And also every now and again, we'll throw out a poll question. And today's main topic was one of those questions where I asked people like, what was their favorite baseball movie of all time? So we got a good number of responses to that, and that has helped kind of form this list that we're about to go through. There is a lot of baseball movies out there. I left off a few, and there's only a couple that I will actually mention. And, you know, I tried to think, too, sometimes, like, is baseball, like, the main part of the movie? Is it really is it just part of what's happening in the movie and not really like the main theme of the movie? So there was movies kind of like, I mentioned one like Brewster's Millions, right? Like that I thought was a really good movie, but only like really loosely tied to baseball, right? There's this whole idea that he's kind of like playing like on his minor league team and everything. So a movie like that didn't make this list. I also left off a number of the biopics that were out there. Some of them just weren't really, to me, like that good of movies to begin with. I'm thinking of like Cobb, The Babe. the movies were kind of weren't great to begin with. And, you know, and so I left some of those off, and I did pick some representative movies that were more biopic oriented. Left off a lot of the like documentary movies. One of the ones that I think is really good that I just, you know, decided not to go with documentaries, but The Battered Bastards of Baseball, the Netflix series all about, you know, the team that Kurt Russell, the actor's dad, kind of owned for a couple of years there. And they really tried to challenge the way that independent baseball was played. That's a really good movie if you want to go watch that. So I would highly recommend that. But yeah, so things like that were left off. Left off things like, again, another biopic, the Jackie Robinson story that Jackie Robinson actually starred in. Left that one off as well. And so what's left here is 20 movies that I think are really worth watching. And some of them are harder to find than others. But a lot of these are pretty easy to find and probably ones that you go back to from time to time. So we're going to kind of run down this list here, starting with number 20, which is probably the one that I've only seen this movie once, and it was years and years and years ago. It is Bingo Long, Traveling All-Stars, and Motor Kings. This is a movie, a lot of great actors in it. There's a ton of people in the cast. And I think Billy Dee Williams is one of the big stars of it. James Earl Jones is also in it. And this is all really about the Negro Leagues. And I think it's a really good movie about that. It's got a lot of humor in it as well. But I would put that one as like a really good representative movie of a different style of baseball than what we're typically used to, but an important part of like baseball's history. So Bingo Long, Traveling All-Stars, and Motor Kings. Can't even give you that much information about the movie. Just remember it making a nice impact upon me when I got a chance to see it, but it's probably been 30 or 40 years since I had a chance to see it, right? So, and it's really hard to find. I haven't seen it in a lot of places, but I'm sure it's out there somewhere. I'm sure you can find it with everything that's available streaming-wise. It's probably got to be available somewhere. So that's number 20. At number 19, I have Trouble with the Curve. Now, this one stars Clint Eastwood as the main character in it. Amy Adams and Justin Timberlake are also in the cast. So it follows more the story of a old-time scout and starting to face like the modern era of baseball when they're starting to look more at analytics to try to, you know, make the decisions about who to draft and which prospects to sign. So it's a theme that comes up in a couple of the movies that we're going to see, right? But this idea of like the old approach of it's based on the, you know, passing the eye test versus what do the metrics tell us? And one of the movies that kind of says, hey, yeah, metrics give you a lot, but they don't give you everything. Some of the good parts of it, I mean, it's a really well acted movie and it's got a decent storyline to follow. Where it falls short on is some of the baseball pieces of it. The guy that they have playing like the top prospect doesn't really look like much of a baseball player. So it's a stretch from that standpoint, but, you know, it's worth a watch. It comes up a lot in like, you know, feeds cause it's got some really good snippets, that play well, but it's at number 19 on this list, Trouble with the Curve. At number 18, and this is one of the ones I would call more of like in the biopic range, it's 61. One of the HBO movie all about Mantle and Maris. Again, well-acted movie. I think they did a really nice job of kind of covering it. The story and the script is a little weak at times, but they did a really nice job of kind of capturing the story behind the story, right? Like we all know about Mantle and Maris. It's one of the ones that I think plays really well for the tabletop as well because you can almost – I can almost see myself like following that movie and then kind of, you know, also like getting that game out and like playing a little bit of like Mantle of Maris's season, right? And recreating the chase. Like that could be a really fun project to do. So checking in at number 18 is 61, and good movie. Got some limitations to it. I thought the baseball was pretty good, and the storyline behind the whole idea of like the asterisk, right? Because it's 61 asterisk, telling through like how they kind of slighted Maris, even though he ended up beating the Babe's record. It was, you know, he beat the Babe's record, right? So like they decided to take other steps around that, and that's what the 61 asterisk is all about. All right, at number 17, it is Love of the Game. Here comes another theme. It's Kevin Costner time. Kevin Costner has got a few movies on this list. This is probably the weakest of the three. The thing, it's all about the guy, and you know he's pitching a perfect game, right? And it takes you through all that he's going through as he's seeing like his career wrap up. He has that one last shining moment in the sun. The baseball in it is okay. I think the thing that really saves this movie above all else is Vin Scully. Vin Scully doing the play-by-play for the entire movie is probably the thing that makes the movie stand out more than anything else. It's got an okay storyline. But the baseball is okay, but I think it's Vin Scully, right? And then capturing kind of like him being in the spotlight at Yankee Stadium and the Yankee Stadium crowd like coming on him too, I think was another fun part of the movie. That's to me was like what made this movie was Vin Scully and getting a chance to just hear him doing play by play for the entire movie. So that's number 17. It's Love of the Game. At number 16, we have another probably the best biopic on this list, minus one other one. But I think this one in terms of like really the biopic piece, which is Pride of the Yankees. This is the one that's all about Lou Gehrig. It's the one that covers like his famous speech. I think they did a really nice job though with like just covering the life of Lou Gehrig in this movie. It is got some okay acting in it. The baseball is okay. It definitely has more of kind of a play feel to it than a full epic movie, which is similar to a lot of movies in that time frame, right? I forget what year this was made, probably in the 40s. I don't think it quite made it to the 50s. So, and you know, in the 40s, that was more the style of movie. They didn't really do as much with the grand epics for some of these kind of movies. So when you're watching it, it feels more like you're watching a play to a degree, but I think it's a really good tribute to Lou Gehrig. So Pride of the Yankees checks in here at number 16. At number 15, it's probably one of the games that one of the movies, excuse me, that has a loose affiliation with baseball. The main theme in this movie is not baseball, and the movie is Fever Pitch. So Jimmy Fallon, Drew Barrymore. Baseball is just one of the side stories, and it probably wouldn't have made my list except for one critical piece of it. So he is a Boston Red Sox fan, and it's all about the misery of being a Boston Red Sox fan and how he is constantly tormented by being a Red Sox fan and betrayed by the Red Sox, even when they seem like they're doing well. And I don't know if they had to rewrite the ending of this movie or if they wrote it based on the way things played out. But, you know, the whole idea was that he, you know, is watching once again the Yankees defeat the Red Sox in the playoffs, and he's ready to just quit, give up on baseball. And then it happens. It's 2004 playoffs, and the Red Sox come from behind. And it was that dramatic series where they basically won three in a row to overtake the Yankees. and recover from like the depths at that point. And they used that for the ending of the movie, which was just crazy. So I thought that that was really cool. And for that reason only, and the fact that it caught that kind of moment in history and showed that from the Boston Red Sox fan, point of view, that that's what really kind of made this and had enough baseball to kind of make it stand up there. So at number 15, it's Fever Pitch. All right, we get to number 14 now. Probably another one that you can't find that easily, and probably one that not a lot of folks have had a chance to see, but it's Bang the Drum Slowly. Again, well-acted movie. The main character, one of the main characters played by Robert De Niro, he plays this kind of light-hitting catcher on the team who is also suffering from a terminal illness. And it just kind of follows this kind of fictional team, the New York Mammoths, and follows them kind of through their season. And it's, once again, like similar to what we've seen in some other films here. It's the relationship with the pitcher and the catcher. It's the star pitcher and his favorite target catcher, who's not maybe the best catcher on the team, but it's the one that he likes to use. They are designed to be, you feel like they're the Yankees, but they're not quite, right? It's more of a fictional team. But I think it does a really nice, it's just a really good job of kind of telling like the relationship between the players and the teams. So it's a really well done movie. And that checks in here at number 14, Bang the Drum Slowly. At number 13, it's The Rookie, and this is the one that was starring Dennis Quaid, based on the real-life story of the pitcher who, you know, came out of nowhere in his 30s and, you know, came up through the ranks with Tampa Bay Rays pretty quickly and ended up getting his shot at the major leagues. Disney put the movie together. It's very Disney-fied. It has that Disney feel to the story. But I thought they did a pretty decent job of kind of, you know, taking you through like what this guy went through. So I thought from that standpoint, the baseball part of it held up pretty well, even if it did have that kind of Disney-fied feel to it, of just being a little too fairy tale-ish, right? It probably only loosely kept up with reality from that standpoint. But The Rookie will check in here at number 13. I think we're at 13. And, you know, decent movie. I think it holds up well. And again, because it's Disney-fied, right? Disney movies tend to be easy watches, even if they're not always the best movies. At number 12, we've got one of a couple of movies that were made during the strike point in Major League Baseball. Right around that mid-90s, you saw a bunch of baseball movies popping up, and I think it was because there was more access to some of the stadiums that were empty, right? Like the baseball was in a strike in 94 going into the beginning of the 95 season, and I think a bunch of people jumped on getting some scripts pulled together and getting into these stadiums to film some baseball movies. That's my take on it. It's a bit of speculation, but the fact that certain, like some of these movies also had some major leaguers playing in them, I think also played into that idea that these guys were available. One of those was Little Big League. So Little Big League tells the story of the grandson of the Minnesota Twins owner who passes away, leaves the team to his grandson, and the grandson decides he's going to manage the team and kind of takes you through that season. I think that, you know, it's very much comedy, but I think they did a nice job of kind of getting you in the clubhouse, getting you to think about like how can baseball be fun again? The baseball is decent. They have some, you know, they do a little bit of things with trick plays and stuff like that. But it has the right look and feel to it. They had, like I said, there's a few major leaguers who actually, like, you know, pop into the movie during it. So stands up from that standpoint, too. But it's a it's got a decent storyline, easy to follow, and just a easy watch. And I think of the ones that had, like, the little kids, like, the other one that was very similar to this was Rookie of the Year with the kid who ends up having the arm injury and then ends up being able to throw the ball really fast. They both kind of, like, stood up together a little bit. So Little Big League is the one that is in there next. That's number 12. At number 11, another older baseball movie, Mr. Baseball, starring Tom Selleck. And I think this one, again, similar to the Bingo Long, gives us a look at a different type of baseball. Because this one takes place mostly in Japan. Baseball is one of the two themes running through it, right? It's also, like, all about Japanese culture and things like that, too. But, you know, it's the stranger in a strange land approach, right? Tom Selleck was this big-time baseball player, but now he can't seem to get a contract. So he goes out and he is playing in Japan, just trying to, you know, find a way back to the major leagues. And I think they do a really nice job of showing you baseball from the Japanese standpoint and bringing you into the cultural pieces of it. And the baseball holds up. It's played, they play it. The guys all look like baseball players for the most part. Right. So it holds up from that standpoint too. Yeah, it has, like, you know, like most of them, it comes up with this kind of, like, fantastic ending of it in a sense, but, I think it holds up, and Selleck knows enough about baseball to be able to pull it off too. So it holds up from that standpoint too. So Mr. Baseball at number 11, I think, does a nice job there of kind of giving you that glimpse at what feels like a realistic storyline, right? It felt like it could definitely be something you would see happening to a major league player, and probably has happened more often than not. And that brings us to number 10. We get into the top 10 here. And at number 10, and this is really more of a franchise than anything else, but I think even the first movie and probably the second movie hold up really well, which is Bad News Bears. I think there's only a couple of the kids' movies that really capture the essence of what it's like to be a kid playing baseball, and Bad News Bears is one of those that really kind of gives you the glimpse into what Little League baseball was like, right? Where your team will have some really good players on it, and typically it's driven by the one star player, but everybody else is just trying to figure out how to survive on the baseball field. And I think Bad News Bears covers that really well. And the disparity between, like, a team that's loaded versus the team that's not. And real fun movie, well acted, and really holds up. And so Bad News Bears checks in at number 10. The second movie where they actually go to the Astrodome to play a team in Texas, I think also does a really nice job. So I think it's those first two films. And then, of course, there's, you know, put the personal plug in, and they actually built the TV series about it. So if you go back to, like, the late 70s, early 80s, you'll know there was a TV show on the Bad News Bears. Check that out on IMDb, because the girl who played the pitcher was my cousin. So that checks in at number 10 here. At number 9, and the final movie that was not mentioned by the poll, and this one was a kind of surprise that it didn't make the poll, to be quite honest. But number 9, it's Bull Durham. And I think one of the best movies, again, Kevin Costner in here. He's got another one on this list, but Bull Durham, I think, is really good. It does a nice job with baseball, real funny movie, and well-written, just a well-written script. Tim Robbins and Kevin Costner, Susan Sarandon, just kind of, like, steal the movie. So, I think it's just great, great look at minor league baseball and a really good tribute to baseball overall. So Bull Durham checks in here at number 9. All right, we'll come back and cover the top 8, which will be all the ones that were mentioned in the poll, in just a second. All right, now we get to the top eight films. All of these received some mention in the poll that I ran, and we'll start with number eight, which is 42, the story of Jackie Robinson breaking into baseball. Decent acting. The baseball is okay. I think it did a nice job of kind of capturing the emotions of Robinson trying to break in, the relationship with him and Pee Wee Reese. So again, Disney-fied kind of movie, right? I think they had a big play into that. And, but it does a decent job of kind of capturing what it was like for Jackie Robinson to kind of break in and break the color barrier and give you a little bit of like the storyline of why it was him chosen versus others. So 42, we'll check in here at number eight. At number seven, it's A League of Their Own. And again, I think A League of Their Own does a nice job of capturing a different league of baseball other than the major leagues, based on a real story, although a fictional story within that. Talking about all the women who played professional baseball while most of the men were away at fighting World War II, right? So captures that kind of moment in time really well. Well acted, a lot of good performances throughout the movie, and a really decent script. Again, does a nice job across the board, and baseball is definitely running is the theme throughout the entire movie. It is all about the baseball. So it does a really nice job from that standpoint as well. It's a good watch. So it checks in here at number seven, League of Their Own. At number six, and probably one of my three favorite baseball movies here, even though it's going to check in here at number six, and the best of the kid movies, it's The Sandlot. And I think this covered what, for most of us, this is what baseball felt like when we were growing up. At least for me. I lived in a rural town, and this is exactly what baseball looked like for us, for the most part, which was just playing on kind of a made-up field and, you know, just figuring it out as we went. So The Sandlot does a really nice job of that, capturing kind of that essence of what it was like growing up and, you know, in the time frame, it could have been like the 60s or the 70s. It was right in that kind of window there. And then they got some really cool stories in there that helped let kids be kids. The whole thing with like trying to get the baseballs back from the dog and building the erector sets and all that kind of stuff. So it does a really nice job from that standpoint too. You also get a nice appearance from James Earl Jones in the movie. So it covers some good stuff. So The Sandlot checks in at number six. At number five, we've got the last of the Kevin Costner movies. It's Field of Dreams. And I think Field of Dreams is probably the best tribute to like the kind of poetry of baseball. It also from that tabletop standpoint, again, there's a few of these movies that do a nice job from the tabletop, and I think this is one of the ones that, you know, it's all about putting together that all-star team in a sense, right? Like the ghosts of the past coming back to play in the field, in the cornfield, coming out of the corn, and then, you know, you've got all of these like old-time players like back on this field. The whole storyline with Moonlight Graham being woven there. Yeah, it's a really good movie, and it has stood the test of time, even to the point now where they play that game every year, right? The Field of Dreams game still gets played by the major league teams. So Field of Dreams will check in here at number five. At number four, another really good baseball movie, and probably the best of the comedies here. It's Major League. And Major League tells the story of the Cleveland Indians. Again, became a decent franchise, got three or four films, I think, out of it. But this was by far the best of the bunch. I think really good acting. A lot of good people signed up for it. And the baseball was good. I mean, they went for the reach in a couple of places, but it held up in terms of like the quality of the baseball. Again, went with that kind of like fantastic ending there, but baseball runs is the main theme. It's got some great one-liners in it throughout, and it just really stands up. And I thought it was really interesting how like it started to mimic what that like Cleveland Indians team started to look like in the early years there too. And when they started to really become good, like this almost like was like a precursor to what that really good Indians team in the 90s started to look like. So Major League number four, very deserving. At number three, it's another historical piece, another one based on real life. Although I think they took some liberties again, and that is Eight Men Out. Tells the story of the Black Sox, the 1919 Chicago White Sox, and how they threw the World Series. And really good acting throughout. It's a really well-written movie, and it really captures like the time period well. I think of all of these, it does the best at just capturing like being a historical piece. And it might be one of the two best movies just in terms of like movie quality. Like this is one of the two best ones on this list. It really can stand up on its own as a movie, much less a baseball movie. So Eight Men Out does a really fantastic job of just kind of telling that story and building some sympathy for the guys that, you know, were brought along for the ride and banned from baseball, even though they may not have, you know, played the biggest role in throwing it. They still kept their mouth shut too long and paid the penalty for that. So Eight Men Out checks in at number three. And then we get to our top two, and these were the ones that got the most mentions, and probably deservingly so. At number two, it's probably my favorite of all the baseball movies, and Moneyball. Moneyball tells the story of those 2001, 2002 Oakland A's, Billy Beane, based on the book, all about the kind of A's approach to player evaluations. And again, similar to Trouble with the Curve, the old school approach versus the new school approach. In this case, though, the new school approach out of necessity, right? Couldn't compete with the rest of the teams if they continued to do what everybody else did. So they took a different approach. Acting is good. I think they did a nice job of casting the team to, you know, resemble the Oakland A's. It falls short for the same as the book, that it doesn't do a lot of mentioning the fact that like the Oakland A's had one of the best starting pitching staffs in baseball. And that, you know, because of the fact that they had guys like the top starters that they did, Tim Hudson, Barry Zito, right? Like, that freed them up to do a bunch of other things around the offense because they just had such outstanding starting pitching. So they didn't really mention that at all. They didn't really get into those. They barely even get a mention in the movie at all. It's more focused on the kind of other guys that they bring on. And I think that's probably the weakness of the movie. But overall, I think it does a really nice job of telling the story. And even though it feels like it reaches for fantasy with this whole idea of them getting this ridiculously long win streak and everything, I mean, it's all based on reality, right? Like, and they even tried to keep it like to letter of the law. So Moneyball of telling like a real life drama story in a movie. And then we get to the other number one film, and maybe one of the best films in this space, well acted, great storyline, and that's The Natural. Starring Robert Redford, all about Roy Hobbs. And yeah, this is just a great baseball movie on so many fronts. It covers like the poetry of baseball. It does a nice job of recreating what baseball should look like. You've got the play-by-play announcer like covering the game throughout. You've got just so many good elements. The manager is great. The coach is great. The owner is great. Like, it just, everybody's role is well-defined. The sports writer, right? And just tremendous acting throughout all of it. It's just a great movie. And again, if it wasn't about baseball, it would probably still be a great movie. But because it's about baseball, it makes number one on this list. And the timing of it, you know, I was a teenager, young teenager when it came out. And yeah, if you didn't have like somewhere in one of your baseball games a Roy Hobbs card, then you were missing the boat, right? Like, I had to create like this fictional card for Roy Hobbs somewhere in my at that point, which one was I playing? I was probably playing like Superstar Baseball at that point with the old Sports Illustrated, like, you know, SI Baseball. And then I'm pretty sure I also created a card for him using Status Pro as well, right? Just had to be something you did. So, you know, because of Roy Hobbs and that kind of image that he portrayed, like, he had to be that guy who was in your tabletop game. And it's just, it's a fun watch. Like, I can watch that movie anytime and it holds up, and it's just an enjoyable movie to watch. So, well chosen by the community. Number one, it's The Natural. And that's it. There's your list of the top 20 baseball movies of all time. I probably missed a couple of ones out there. I'm sure that you've got some favorites that didn't quite make the list. But that's the list for today and top 20. And hopefully that helps with your enjoyment of baseball and gets you through some tough times when your team's not playing that well. Go watch a movie and maybe get inspired to like get another baseball project on your tabletop as well. All right, let's come back and wrap up this episode. And that's a wrap on this week's episode, where we covered the top 20 baseball movies of all time. And thanks again to everybody in the community who weighed in and helped curate this list. Yeah, you touched on some of my favorites. Like I said, my personal three that I will go back to over and over again, probably Moneyball, 8 Men Out, and The Sandlot. Those are probably my three favorite of this list, although there's a number of these that I think are just really good movies as well. So, but those are probably the three that stand the test of time for me. What we've got coming up next week, two things actually next week. So first, what I'll be posting is an interview with Gary Brown that I will be recording this week, and we're going to be talking all about Legends of Boxing 2. So getting a chance to sit down with Gary, who owns Stone Mountain Press, and cover the new game that'll be coming out soon, Legends of Boxing 2. We're going to talk all about what's different between the two versions of Legends of Boxing, and he's been doing a good job of kind of covering some of the development work there, but we're going to get in the weeds on some of that as well and learn a little bit about the update to the game. Also, next Sunday, May 5th, we're going to have my quarterly hangout. If you are a Patreon subscriber and you still have time to jump in, if you'd like to take part, but I'll be sending out invites probably tomorrow night for you to join. It's just going to be a hangout. We're going to talk all about like some of the events that are coming up. I don't know if anybody's currently at the WisCon event or maybe just now leaving the WisCon event, but if we have anybody on who can give us some feedback on that, that'd be great. We'll probably talk a little bit about that as well. See how that event went down, talk a little bit about play.con, which is coming up, and maybe even a little bit about the football event that'll be taking place in August. You know, we're going to touch on some of those topics as well as some projects that are going on and a little bit of planning that's coming up. Got some new games coming out. There's a lot of good things that we can talk about. So we'll be doing that during Hangout. Anybody who joins will be able to listen in as I record the episode. And also, if we get a couple people to jump on, great. Otherwise, it'll all be kind of like chat generated. So you'll be able to take part in the chat and weigh in as we go through the episode. So those are both happening next week. The episode I'll be posting next week will be Gary's interview. And then the week after that is when I will post the quarterly hangout. So I'm going to record it on Sunday night. It'll come out a week later for the general audience. And this time I'll be able to record it. So we won't miss on it this time around. Other than that, April is coming to a close. And I've just posted on Facebook my May calendar. So you can go check out like all the things that I have going on in May. I'm looking forward to getting a few of those projects highlighted, mostly by continuing with the 2018 Cy Young Award winners, the PGA tournament season, wrapping up my Grid Zone season. I'm going to get some Hockey North America going with it's the Midwest League that it will be, set created by Bob Hansen. Some demo derby on the table. And you know, kicking off, I think in just about a week or so, the Play Tour is returning, and thanks to Paul Salzgaber for helping to run that. So it's going to be a packed month, a lot of action taking place in May, and I'm looking forward to it. So until we meet again, thanks for listening.